This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 246 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we this week?
Doing very well, David. Getting excited about where you and I plan to be next weekend, Saturday the 16th of June.
Yes, for anybody who doesn't know, we have a tradition, almost 8 years now, of going over to the Smithsonian Udvar-Hazy Center for what was Be a Pilot Day and now is In Flight 18. I'm still very proud of that hashtag. And we'll be there hopefully talking some drones as well as talking about airplanes. And if you've never been to the event, it's a fly-in day for the Smithsonian. The Udvar-Hazy Center is adjacent to Dulles Airport, and they have aircraft flying in for the day. So not only do you get to see all of the museum aircraft, but you get to see some living, breathing ones. And usually we have a good time. And then if you're in the area, we go out to dinner afterwards Saturday night to the local Red Robin and have a meet and greet and just have a couple of beers and some burgers and talk drones and UASs and airplanes. So we invite everybody, if you're in the D.C. area, come visit Max and I on the 16th, which is the Saturday before Father's Day. A great family day, and hopefully the weather will hold out.
Yes, but even if it doesn't, well, that might put a damper on the aircraft that have flown in and seeing them outside. But, of course, the museum is enormous, and so there's always lots to do inside. So, yeah, rain or shine, it'll be a great day.
All right, I guess we should get started, Max. We got not a lot of news this week. It wasn't really a newsworthy week, and I have to admit that my co-host did most of the work because I'm drowning in the office, but he's retired. I slacked off this week, so I owe him an apology.
No worries.
So let's get started. Well, our first story comes from geospatialworld.net. In-flight data and SenseFly partner for Canada's largest beyond visual line of sight drone trial. In-flight data, which is Canada's largest commercial drone operator, and SenseFly began working on a beyond visual line of sight experiment.
That's right. This is a 5-month trial. And they say this is the largest such trial that has taken place in Canada anyway. And what they want to do is they want to demonstrate that beyond visual line of sight flights can be conducted safely and efficiently. And, you know, David, as we've been hearing a lot lately, there's not as much data as a lot of organizations would like to have when it comes to drones and drone safety and all of that. Data that can help inform the regulations that need to be developed. Again, we keep hearing that there's a need for that, and we're finding some examples of where that data is hoped to be generated and collected. And this is one of them. This is another one of them. The goal here is to collect a large amount of data, geo-accurate data, and also data across many different types of long-range drone applications.
And the trial's going to run till November, so... And like you said, Max, data is of a premium. We've got such a new universe, and it seems like we've grown so quickly, we've moved so fast, but we don't have the years and years of data that we would have in aviation. We know that the FAA is desperately needing data so that they can start working on regulations. So beyond visual line of sight, of course, is technically illegal here in the States. So you need to have an exemption to get the data, but we need the data so that we can start giving more exemptions. So we're sort of in a circle. But in Canada, they're going to run a mission per week, from pipeline surveys to crop mapping, the landfill volume analysis, graveyard inventory assessments, as well as search and rescue. Interesting. I'm sure that we've talked about each one of those in various episodes over our 246. You know, things like landfill volumes. I remember our conversation about that. It was sort of like, oh, well, how do you do that with a UAV? So interesting. So what kind of statistics are they looking for, or data?
Well, they're looking for data from 14 different test sites. Some of these are specific Transport Canada sites, and others are off-range open airspace sites in rural locations. They're going to use two drones, the SenseFly EB Plus and the SenseFly EB. Flights up to 10 kilometers, pretty significant. They're looking to fly over 1,500 kilometers total, linear flight distance. And they're looking to collect more than 120 data sets, spanning both RGB, thermal infrared aerial imagery. Human observers will be monitoring the flights, air traffic, in order to compare their observations with operators' ground station software experiences. So there's some of that going on as well. So this sounds like this is going to be fairly comprehensive. And again, hopefully we'll generate a lot of great data that will be very useful to many organizations.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, it is comprehensive, because we don't think of some of the stuff that we talk about here about monitoring flights and the data that comes from interacting between ground control stations and the aircraft, or ground control stations and the air traffic control system. So it's all of that necessary data. It'll be interesting to see come November how much they actually have gotten through, and then how long does it take to analyze the data? So,
And the process for sharing the data too. And I mean, I have the same question with the FAA pilot program in the U.S., and we'll mention that a little bit coming up. But I also wonder about how open these organizations will be with all of this data that's going to be collected. I'm really curious to see how that works out.
So moving on. Now, occasionally I take a week off, or I'm really lazy and I let my co-host pick stories. And it never ceases to amaze me that he comes up with something creepy. Either that, or it's about fuel cells.
Oh, yeah. One or the other.
Well, this is from TheVerge.com, one of my favorite websites. Drones taught to spot violent behavior in crowds using AI. You know, we talked, I guess, facial recognition software. Actually, I went to Patuxent River, and a little bit about that later. But my friend Dave and I, on our 3-hour drive down to Patuxent River, talked a little bit about facial recognition software and how sort of creepy it is and how effective it is. And this is one of those things where I'm just sort of going, you know, technology just is getting awfully close to being Big Brother.
Yeah, this does have overtones of that. But let's talk about how this works, or really what this process is. And what we have here, there are researchers in the UK and India are developing this. And it uses a simple Parrot AR quadcopter that takes video and transmits that real time over an internet connection. So you fly this Parrot quadcopter over a crowd. Now, they use a deep learning algorithm. That's where the AI comes in, a deep learning algorithm. And what it does is it identifies poses and matches them to violent postures. So in other words, it looks at the video, it creates little diagrams, in effect, of the individuals that it can discern, and it looks at their poses, things like strangling or punching shooting, stabbing, kicking, activities like that. And it uses that to identify when there is violent behavior going on in a crowd. Now, accuracy of this algorithm that's been developed to this point anyway is a little bit dicey. It turns out, they say, that it's fairly accurate with a very, very small crowd size. In fact, a few individuals. But as the size of the crowd increases, the accuracy drops pretty dramatically. But also there's this effect of sort of simulating crowds, David. They've been using volunteers.
Yeah, and volunteers have the potential of overacting.
Mm.
You know, it's sort of, that was one of the things I said when they were using volunteers acting violently. It was sort of like, I have pictures of everybody was kung fu fighting. How's that for a old school reference?
Yeah.
But just sort of over exaggerating. So I'm wondering if that doesn't help the algorithm. Also, you know, India has talked about using drones for a lot of their festivities and festivals where you have large amounts of people, you know. So it's not surprising that they want some way to subtly surveil a large group of people, not necessarily protests, but just civil festivals or et cetera. So kind of creepy, but kind of amazing that it can do what it can do with small crowds, but it's only time before the crowds will get bigger and bigger.
Yes, and in fact, they're hoping to test this algorithm at a couple of upcoming festivals in India. So that'll be a real-world demonstration of this. There's a paper that they've developed, and this comes out of the University of Cambridge, UK, in the UK, the National Institute of Technology in India, and the Indian Institute of Science, also in India. And we have a paper that we'll have a link to in the show notes. You can take a look at that if you want. Also, there's a video that kind of demonstrates the concepts in the paper and is probably a much easier way to understand what's happening here. But, you know, this is pretty complex. Just to give you a taste, if you really want to dive into it, if you look at the abstract for the paper, it says the system first uses the feature pyramid network to detect humans from aerial images. The image region with the human is used by the proposed ScatterNet hybrid deep learning network for human pose estimation. The orientations between the limbs of the estimated pose are next used to identify the violent individuals. The system detects the violent individuals in real time by processing the drone images in the cloud. This research also introduces the aerial violent individual data set used for training the deep network, which hopefully may encourage researchers interested in using deep learning for aerial surveillance. So it's pretty advanced stuff, David. A little bit over our heads, I think, but it kind of gives you a flavor. And again, if you really want to dig into what's happening here, take a look at the show notes at the uavdigest.com/246. You find a link again to the paper and to the video.
And keeping with the creepy theory of this episode, like 6 months ahead of Halloween, what do you do when you've decided that you've discovered a person acting? You taser them. And this was from CNET.com, which is taser maker Axion partners with DJI on police drone program. The cell's surveillance drones and to direct public safety and law enforcement agencies. What it does is it'll be done through the Axion Air program, where the DJI brings drones and Axion brings its system for chain of custody control. No, they're not going to taser people, but they are really good at maintaining evidentiary custody data, which is always really important when you're placing a case.
Yes, Axion does make tasers. as well as body cameras that police departments use. But again, their claim to fame, at least in this context here, is this system, this data management system, evidence.com. And according to Axon, this is used by more than 200,000 public safety professionals. So these guys know something when it comes to preserving data from law enforcement video cameras. So it's kind of a marriage that that makes a lot of sense, David. DJI certainly knows drones. Axon is certainly or apparently good at this data preservation system. And so you put them together and, you know, that probably is something that's pretty attractive to law enforcement. Because, you know, as law enforcement uses drones more and more, and that the video that the drones create becomes useful as evidence, well, I imagine the courts are going to want to require the same standards for, you know, preservation of that kind of data, accuracy, integrity of that kind of data. So this is kind of I think, a good marriage, as I said.
Yeah, no, and preservation of data, especially evidentiary data, is important. Look at how we talk about all the time in politics and scandals, et cetera, where did we get all the emails? Have we harvested all the emails? Have we secured all the emails? In this case, we want to secure the data, and we want to show a chain link from, this is the police officer that videotaped it. This is where we stored it on this computer. This is where we kept it till we presented it to the court, and showed that there was no tampering in between there. So pretty cool stuff. And I apologize to my co-host about my taser joke after the spying on the AI. So Drone Mama and I have a favorite app. In fact, we beep at each other all the time on our favorite app, which is Waze. So this is from economy.com. GE Drone Venture
Air OS
takes flight. Oh, you see, he even wrote the pronunciation next to it. I'm trying to read it, and it's down below the words. But it's Waze for the sky, or plotting the proper way to fly your drone.
This organization, Air OS, which is spelled, and this is why you have problems with it, it's spelled capital A, then a lowercase I, and then capital RXOS. But the X is silent, and so you just pronounce it Air OS. And it's a venture between two GE business units, between GE Business Innovations, which is the corporate venture capital arm, and GE Aviation. And Air OS is the combination of those two, and so is a wholly owned subsidiary of GE. It's based in Boston, but they have some offices in other locations. And they are working with a lot of different organizations because they want to help develop standard criteria for commercial drone operations. You know, one of the areas in which they're active, you know, David, we talked about the FAA UAS pilot program and how those 10 organizations that were you know, awarded projects are all government agencies. And the FAA wanted that program to focus on those agencies, and then the agencies then working with other partners in their projects. Well, Air OS is part of a number of them. In fact, Air OS is part of three of those.
The city of San Diego, the city of Memphis, and the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma.
That's right. And Air OS has also been selected to partner with Drive Ohio's UAS Center for UTM research. We talked about Drive Ohio, I think, a couple of episodes ago. And Drive Ohio is going to include both air and ground vehicles. So Air OS is out there working with a number of companies. They're also a partner with NASA's technical capability level testing, TCL testing, and also the expansion of the Lance service program. You'll recall that's the low altitude authorization and notification capability. Air OS is involved in that as well. So here again, David, we have a large company that's diving right into unmanned aircraft and this sort of developing industry.
And I have a special place in my heart for GE Aviation. I know they're the enemy, but they've always been really good and really proactive on social media. But I like the fact that they're venturing into everything, including working with New Air, our friends in upstate New York, on their unmanned traffic management system for their beyond visual line of sight corridor. So they're GE's reaching out and trying to touch a little bit of everything for a positive thing. And we'll have a couple of press releases about where Air OS is working together with some of the associations, Griffiths and Syracuse and the other trial companies. So it's the private sector working with the public sector to get the data we need so that the FAA can quickly get people up and running in commercial drone activity.
And I queried Air OS about the name that they selected, and I traded a little bit of email with Terry Voss, who's the director of marketing for Air OS. And Terry said the idea behind Air OS is that it's about an air operating system plus. That's where the X comes from, the plus. Terry said, so while we have current ATM systems, UTM systems will be the plus to that system. And Terry also said, we like to think of it as the 10X factor. So there you have Air OS. So I think we'll be hearing a lot more about Air OS in the future. They're certainly partnering with a lot of different stakeholders. They're in a lot of areas. And we may be able to get someone from Air OS on the show at some point in the future. I think that'd be very interesting.
So we do get some Slack listener mail. This is from Ken. We talked about the webinar series that's debuted this week, which evidently filled up a lot faster than we were expecting, to the point where I think it filled up faster than the FAA was expecting, because the one that ran on Tuesday, they were advertising on Monday, and I was pretty sure that I saw an email from Drone Mama saying it had filled up on Friday. So I guess they were sort of surprised at the response. However, you can download the webinar now as a one-hour video.
That's right. This is the first in this series of webinars. This is how do I apply for a drone waiver? And we'll have the link in the show notes. In fact, you'll be able to watch the video right from the show notes if you visit the uavdigest.com/246. We'll have it right in there. Now, I have not watched this video. I just got the link not too long ago, David. So I haven't had a chance to watch it, but certainly we'll be doing that. Perhaps we'll give you a little bit of feedback in a future episode. But the lesson here is that if you are interested in this video series, get in quick, especially if you want to participate in asking questions and being involved in the interactive part of it. If just watching the video of the webinar afterwards is sufficient for you, then great. It's not difficult. And the FAA says on their website that they're committed to getting the videos of these webinars posted within 48 hours after the conclusion of the webinar. So that's pretty quick.
And Max, we forgot something that we owe an apology for last week, which is Embry-Riddle and has a unmanned systems industry survey that they'd like you to participate in. And we've got a large industry audience. So you could do that through a shortcut, which is the uavdigest.com/USIS. And that's the Unmanned Systems Industry Survey. And we'd like for our listeners to participate. It doesn't take that long, and it will help Embry-Riddle. It's more about that data. They're looking for what's out there in the industry. And it's funny that now we're talking, we've moved so much away from hardware, Max. It's data, and data. we're now in, but for once, we're not in data overload, we're in data underload. Is that a word? where we need more and more and more. So please help us and our friends at Embry-Riddle take the survey. Again, that's theuavdigest.com/USIS.
All right. And with that, I think we'll wrap up this episode. We want to thank you all for listening. Again, this has been episode 246, so you know where to find the show notes. That's the uavdigest.com/246. David, where can they find us online?
They can find us on Twitter at @UAVDigest. They can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/UAVDigest. You can become part of our Slack listener team, the UAVDigest.com/team, or just send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest. And we'll send you a link, and you can join our power performers and power fans who know more about this stuff than Max and I ever will. And, of course, you can leave us some feedback on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we want to say thank you for listening. And this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And maybe we'll see you in D.C. on Saturday the 16th.